welcome to back to Cairo Nights. We're getting ready to get rolling with Stacy here in just a moment. We have some news. Apparently, we had been hoping, I guess all of us here in Seattle had been hoping, that we would be seeing a potential weird season, right? 60 games. We were hoping we were going to see the Mariners in the playoffs. Apparently, that one thing happened. And the word was this, that perhaps if the Mariners won out their big season against the Oakland A's, the big end of the season against the Oakland A's, a four-game stretch, if they won all those games and a couple of other things happened, the Mariners could have squeaked into the playoffs. But we forgot one thing.
What's that?
It's the Mariners. and
oh, that's so mean.
And that makes it a little bit impossible. Now, remember, anything that we got out of this season was considered a real benefit.
A bonus.
Because we did not actually have a team that was supposed to go anywhere.
Right.
And this team played surprisingly well. There's some real Kyle Lewis, other people on the team who've proven to be some fairly serious talent. And I think Jerry DePoto, I think other people with the Mariners were a little bit surprised that we could actually get a team going going that well this quickly. I mean, it could end up being one of those seasons that gave the team a tremendous amount of confidence in going into next year. And then it became sort of like they were sniffing the playoffs, and it's hard not to get your hopes up.
And keeping in mind that they also gave away a couple of their big guns.
We are again, as it was for Sarah Winchester and the Winchester Mystery House, we are rebuilding.
And rebuilding.
But the baseball people tell me, the Mike Salks and Danny O'Neills of the player, the Tom Wassels and other people who follow the Mariners very, very closely around here, tell me that this rebuild feels more legit than most. And so I am hoping that that in this particular case, the deep disappointment of not having the Mariners in the playoffs can be answered. We have a little trouble getting Stacy on. Stacy, are you on? She is not on now. All right. Are we going to be getting her on?
Awesome. Talk to her, Shane. Oh, we are?
Not a problem. All right. So, anyway, Frank, what I was saying about the Mariners is, because it is the Mariners, look, it's an easy time to just like do that, oh, well, Mariners blew it again. They actually didn't in this year. I actually think there's a lot to be excited about. The team is quite good. They are quite young. Youngest team in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
And so missing this mark, if they had gotten in, it would have been a lark. It would have been cool. It would have been another thing to root for. They managed to hold on long enough, keep our interest long enough for the Seahawks to go 2-0. And so
there is another bright spot that
exactly
we haven't mentioned, and that is that understand. And I have a dear friend who is a fanatic, so he will tell me these backdoor things.
Right,
DePoto and Service inherited a farm system that was a mess.
Completely.
The Mariners farm system was a disaster. And as of now, at the end of the season, it's in the best shape that it has been in years. So not only do we have a young, promising team that performed far better than we thought it was going to,
right,
but we have what appears to be a pretty solid farm system now in shape, feeding us in the coming years. And so that's something to celebrate too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm hoping that, you know, when next season rolls around and when things become a little bit more normal, we will have an opportunity actually to attend these games to see. I mean, my big hope this year, and I'm kind of bummed that it happened this year. I grew up a big Giants fan, and I grew up a Giants fan when the Giants were one of the worst teams in baseball. I suffered through, I don't remember how many hundred loss seasons, at least two that I can remember in my childhood, but they all felt like hundred loss seasons because they were so out of it. I remember at one particular point, and we always hated the Los Angeles Dodgers, so we always called the Dodgers our great rival. And I remember one point Tommy Lasorda, the then Dodgers manager, said, rival?
How can you be a rival if you don't win?
He had a particular cruelness to him. And in fact, here's a funny story about that. So when the Giants were closing Candlestick Park,
right,
and Candlestick was where I spent a lot of my childhood going to baseball games. Worst ballpark in America by many people, especially during the AstroTurf years, which they refer to it as Candlestone, because people were regularly getting injured out there because it was like green concrete. And I would go to a lot of games, and the games were cold, and the games were, you know, they would have literally tornadoes of hot dog wrappers outfield. Juan Marichal once got blown off the mound. It was one of those situations, where it was a terrible place to go, yet everyone gets nostalgic when they're going to close it down. They open up a beautiful new park. And so for the final game, they actually, and I got to say, I appreciate everyone on all sides on this, they actually flew in Tommy Lasorda just so the fans could boo him one last time. And he was such a great...
He was a good sport about it.
It was a cascade of booing. It was relentless. And he was like waving to the crowd.
Loving it. It was...
I got to say, that was one of my favorite sports moments of the last 20 years, was bringing Tommy Lasorda back. Long retired Tommy Lasorda.
Right.
So we could boo him one last time from Candlestick. It was fantastic. Did we get Stacy on? All right.
Good.
Stacy, are you there? There you are.
I'm here. Is that Frank I hear too?
That is Frank. Frank as well.
I never get to talk
Frank,
with.
I miss you.
I miss you, Stace. I wish you'd come around more.
I know. I never get to be there anymore. Oh well, I'm here now.
Well, good. So Stacy, what I was explaining was we were all excited to talk about the possibilities of the Mariners and this big four game. Stand against the A's and how it could even be, and I was all pumped up about the idea that that it could be. Well, literally, the last two games of the season
were a doubleheader.
Like,
this is gonna be awesome.
Exactly. I thought like it's going to be a doubleheader. The last two games of the season. What if it depends on like them winning both games
it
and they win the
cool.
first one? I love that stuff. That's to me. That's why I watch sports. And then.
Yeah.
So what happened? What happened exactly, Stacey?
Well, okay. So, well, the thing is, the Mariners would have needed to win this final series, which did have a doubleheader, which I've decided are actually really fun. Like, let's hang on to some of those moving forward.
I agree.
The seven-inning doubleheaders, I'm down for it. They also, though, needed the Astros, because Houston has the tiebreaker, to, I think, drop maybe their final four to essentially, like, fall out of it.
Well, I see.
So basically for Houston to lose and Seattle to win, Seattle would have to win every game. And I think Houston would have had to lose every game, and Houston won. You also had, I think Toronto. So basically Seattle put itself in a spot, and this sounds like a bad thing. I actually think this season was a success for them, but they put themselves in a spot where they were mathematically alive, but needed like a bajillion things to happen. And unfortunately those hopes came to an end with Houston's win tonight. So the Mariners have extended that playoff drought 1 year longer.
Dang, 20 seasons now?
No, is it? Is it 20?
No, it was 19 seasons. I think this is the 19th season.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
One more season. Yeah, because I remember I got into town in 2000. In 2001, we have that year. I mean, that ridiculous year.
Wonderful year.
And it was like, you know, Ichiro. It was so exciting.
The 119 year?
Yeah. This
119 wins?
This was the... one of the best baseball towns in America for a period of time. So much new stuff was happening. It felt like a destiny. And yeah, they you know, didn't get deep in the playoffs, but it felt like the future was written already.
Right.
Like it was going to happen. And of course,
one saw this coming. No one sees. I don't think anyone sees like an almost 2-decade playoff drought coming. I mean, it's the longest in, you know, professional sports. And I think that what I keep seeing, I don't know if you guys get this, like, say on the text line when you're talking about the Mariners. I think that there's a portion of Mariners fans that are like, cool, you can't hurt me anymore. There's another portion of Mariners fans that are like, I don't believe you. Like, they still get angry about it every year. And if you're like, hey, this group is really exciting, they understandably are kind of distrustful of that because they're like, this is what I've been told. I mean, depending on how old they are, for a really good portion of their life, you know, I mean, I think of like the last time the Mariners were in the playoffs. I mean, I was in, I think, sixth grade or middle school, which is crazy. So what I will say, and I know that that portion of fans aren't going to believe me on this one, but I'm going to say it anyways. This group is really exciting. And I know that people are tired of hearing that, but there is something special about this season. Kyle Lewis, there are moments that he was compared to like Griffey throughout the season. And that's a big comparison to make, and people don't want to make that. And it feels very unfair, almost like both players, because you want to write your own story. And also Griffey accomplished so much and means so much to people in Seattle. But they've got some guys on this team that people should be excited about. They weren't even supposed to be close to contending this year. And for them to be even like mathematically in it, even if it's really unlikely this late in the season, in a shortened season or not, that's something to be proud of, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it is, I mean, and I'm going to try to remain. I mean, again, it's not my top team. It's probably my second team. I mean, I've sort of assigned Seattle all the number two spots in my roster, mm-hmm. you know, because I grew up, you know, a Raiders fan, and I grew up a Giants fan, which is a weird combination because most people don't pick those two. And of course, a Warriors fan. And the nice thing is I was never a big Sharks fan. It was where I actually went to school in San Jose. It all happened after I had already left San Jose, so I never really connected that strongly with it. And so that'll be an easy one. The Kraken will be probably my one, and the Kraken and the Sounders will be my two Seattle number ones, and then everything else will be number two. So I'm actually excited about this team. I'm really looking forward. I'm a little bummed. I don't think the Giants come back for a while now. We kind of had this year where the Giants on the schedule probably, I don't think, will happen again. Maybe it will next year. I don't know how they're going to do the scheduling next year, but I am kind of hopeful. And everyone,
I mean, they might do something similar.
I hope so. But everyone who knows the team seems to think that, wait a minute, yeah, I know we've been saying rebuilding a lot, but this time we really mean it. And so hopefully that's the case, right?
Yeah, well, and you've got a different story this time around. Like, you've got it, again, like, so much of this blends together for fans. Everyone in my family is a Mariners fan. Like, everyone in my family's local. They've all grown up watching different iterations of this team strive for making it and strive for being a change and then fail. And I think this time around, I will say, this past season, 2019, and then leading into this season, is the first time I can remember that they did a true rebuild, like a true tear it, you know, from the top down, trade everyone away, and rebuild it. So the guys that they've got coming up, Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, some of the top prospects in baseball. Marco Gonzalez had a phenomenal year that I don't think was just impacted by a short season. I think he showed marvelous command and really nice growth as the Mariners' ace. I think that they have so many pieces. Even guys that, you know, had kind of roller coaster seasons, like Evan White, there were times on defense where you were like, this guy looks like a longtime vet. I mean, he's phenomenal. J.P. Crawford making amazing plays. Again, it sounds like I'm being kind of like fanish, which I don't consider myself like a fan of the teams. I try to be objective. So it sounds like I'm being pointlessly positive, but I'm just saying that, like, trust me, like, this is how I'm looking at the team. I'm not consoling anyone. Right. I don't think anyone's, like, especially surprised. But I do think that there's enough evidence to say that, like, you know what? Whether or not it works, this is a different approach. You have to give them credit for that. It's a different approach.
Absolutely. And let me just, switching tracks for the last sort of 4 minutes we got here. You apparently, I had heard rumors, I actually didn't actually hear the interview, but you actually apparently were talking to a Seahawks player today who talked a bit about what it's like, and you were there at the game, so I guess you got a little bit of your own reaction to this, but what it's like, because I haven't heard the players talking about what it feels like to play a football game with no one there except football players and, like, really skeleton crew.
Yeah. Well, what's weird is I thought that they would be pumping in. I mean, we had talked about it. I thought they would be pumping in crowd noise. When I was in the press box, crowd noise in a regular season is already a little muffled, but you can hear it. And when they get really riled up, it kind of shakes the press box, like vibrates. I couldn't hear anything at any point in the game. So if there was crowd noise being, you know, put in the stadium, it was not nearly the sound that a normal crowd would be, like not even close. So we had Jacob Hollister, who is a tight end on Seattle squad, and we asked him, hey, you know, what was this game like? I mean, it's your first home game. We know it's the second game of the season, but you're back at home. Was it weird? I mean, honestly, like, did you kind of forget about it when you were out there, or did it keep staying weird? And he agreed that the first bit of it's really awkward. Like, when the team comes out onto the field, no one cheers. Like, it's just, it's such a weird thing. He did say that in moments, you know, Seattle's sideline is so great about keeping energy up that, like, with that final goal line stand, they were all screaming. I don't want to speak for them, but I don't know that I got the impression that anyone's, like, hyper aware of them not, you know, being by themselves. But he did say, and Mike, this is kind of eerie, he did say that the weird moments were when it was pretty much complete silence. So in times when you would have, like, say, special teams is coming off the field and the offense is going to go on, they'd normally go to a commercial break at that time. And so there's no, like, cheering per se, but there's still 70,000 people in the stands. You know what I mean? Like, there's still a lot of noise.
Right. Oh, no, nothing. Yeah, there's this sort of din, right, all the time.
Yeah, imagine you're on the offense and you're going out to the field and it's just quiet. Like, that's got to be weird.
Have any of the Seahawks players mentioned about, I mean, one of the things that was perceived to be a big advantage for the Seahawks was the level of crowd noise, not just the crowd noise, but the fact that it was such a cacophony that they would get false start penalties. I remember quite a few over the years when it would turn, when you would be on, and I was on the sidelines a bit during the years just prior to Russell Wilson, a little bit after. When actually, I don't think I ever was on the sidelines when Russell Wilson was playing, but a lot for Matt Hasselbeck, because when I worked at the PI, sometimes you'd end up being out there help out a photographer or something like that, and it would get almost painful on the field. It would get so unbelievably loud. Do the players talk a bit about that sort of advantage that they always had and that they may be missing it this year more than most teams?
You know, the players themselves, at least when we've spoken to them and the handful of interviews we've had since the season has started, they haven't said anything, but I have seen multiple outlets kind of guessing that this insane kind of improvement in quarterback play. I mean, right now, quarterback play is better than it's ever been. And it was kind of going on that scale as the league becomes more pass-friendly, whether that be through rule changes where it penalizes, you know, kind of tough defensive play, whether it be just the speed at which the game is played being faster. So, you know, there's lots of things that already contribute to that, but a lot of people have been guessing that the lack of the crowd noise is also making quarterbacks play better than ever. So you're seeing, obviously, Russell Wilson's good and was going to be good, but guys like Josh Allen out in Buffalo having a great start to his season. I mean, he's one of the top people in the MVP conversations this early in the year. So you haven't heard players per se mention that, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was some truth to it, because you got to think, Mike, when you're out there, like, you can hear everything. Like, if you're on defense, you can hear what the offense is saying. But if you're on offense, you can communicate clearly. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that is having an impact on play. It's not something I would have thought about before the season, but it seems like it's happening.
All right. That is Stacey Jo Rost, 710 ESPN, Tom Jake and Stacey Show. Stacey, thank you once again. We will talk to you again tomorrow with what? We're going to be talking about how many points the Seahawks are going to beat the Dallas Cowboys by, right? And you have an exact number for us?
Yeah, I have the correct score, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. And coming up now, Rachel Bell, she's going to be talking about a business startup, business incubator in Tukwila that you are absolutely going to want to visit as soon as you hear her story, and just after the break.
You can ring my bell.
Rachel, with the pandemic in place, it's really had a negative effect on the food and beverage industry. But apparently there are actually things that are improving, or maybe even new opportunities that are happening for people here in this area, right?
Yeah, there's been some new restaurants opening, and I'm always very surprised at that. But right. There is one in particular that's been in the works for a couple of years that is very special.
I'm cooking chicken for the empanadas for tomorrow, and onions, garlic. And,
Monica De Bartolomeo, an immigrant from Argentina, has a dream to open a bakery featuring the pastries and sweets from her home country.
The price of the kitchens, when you have to rent a kitchen, is very expensive and too risky, especially when you are starting.
So Monica, along with many other immigrant and refugee women of color, found a home in the incubator program at the Food Innovation Network.
The intent of the incubator program is to help folks that have not had access to commercial kitchens, have challenges navigating the permitting system. The incubator program provides services around business development as well as a commercial kitchen space. Even as English as my first language, I can tell you navigating permitting systems, it can be really confusing.
That's program director Kara Martin. For several years, the incubator program has helped immigrant and refugee women launch catering companies, create food products, and sell their food at farmers markets. But until now, they didn't have a permanent physical space. But now you can visit Spice Bridge in its brand new building, complete with commercial kitchen.
Spice Bridge is a global food hall here in Tukwila. We're a nonprofit running a food business incubator. So when you come in, you're supporting businesses that are just getting launched and have incredible culinary talent.
Spice Bridge features four restaurant kiosks and eight vendors that will rotate through. Some of the cuisine that is served there is not yet represented at any other restaurant anywhere in the region, like Caroline Musitu's Taste of Congo.
I'm making the food that's most popular in my country, Congo.
Caroline fled the Congo in 2009 with her husband and two children.
There is a war. There is no peace. That's why we came here. Yeah.
Her first job in Washington was in the Oberto warehouse in Kent. But thanks to the incubator program and Spice Bridge, you can now taste her cooking.
Mine is like a big, big step with my dream.
Oh, that makes me so happy for you. How long have you had this dream?
I think since I was little, I was dreaming of.
Caroline says opening a restaurant has been her dream since she first started helping her mom cook as a little girl in Africa.
That's the bell pepper. I'm cutting for the yassa.
Umi Sala chops bell peppers in the Spice Bridge kitchen for the dishes she'll be serving that day.
Jollof rice, chicken yassa, chicken dibi.
Omi cooks Gambian and Senegalese food with her sister, Adama Jame, for their catering company, Alefa Jollof.
I am from Gambia, West Africa. I came to the United States to better my future and change my life because I was going through a lot in there.
She left Gambia to leave a bad marriage behind.
You know, it's not easy sometimes with our husbands and the families. So that's why I am here.
Umi says she is forever grateful for the Food Innovation Network's help navigating the complicated system and helping her get a business off the ground.
These people are great. Yeah. If we have a word more than thank you, we will give it to them. They make everything possible for us. Till we come here, we were crawling until now, we are walking with our feet. And we are so proud of them. Everything is convenient for us here. So we have a very, very big thank you for them.
But the women also have stake in their success and help each other out as much as they can.
Could I get two of the veggie samosa and then a small cup of a jollof rice, please?
Eight vendors at Spice Bridge means food from more than eight different countries, including Cambodia, Afghanistan, and a Tanzania, Somalia, and Kenya mashup. Here's Monica again.
The thing that I can say is that if you have a dream, just follow it. If you let your cook, just keep doing it. We spend more than 10 years trying to do this. And the day came and the dream came true.
Spice Bridge is open 6 days a week in Tukwila. You can find more about it, the hours, the location at mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell. It's basically the American dream.
That story was phenomenal. I love it.
Thank you.
And that kind of stuff makes me so... I get so worked up because you think about the people and like the whole notion of the anti-immigrant bias, and like you hear this, like, this is it. That's right. It. That's the American dream in a nutshell. I cannot get enough of those stories. I love that.
There's also a strange thing that happens with food from abroad, because, you know, you saw this with Trump. Everyone loves Mexican food in this country, but a lot of people want to build a wall and they don't connect the two things. And you hear all the time, food brings us together. And it's true, but a lot of people can't get beyond the food. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would love the food that these women are cooking, but would still not want them in our country. And there's, it just doesn't make sense to me. There's just such a divide.
Well, and also, and it also is a shout out to the incubator itself. I mean, this is what you can do. You can actually create a platform by which people can do their own work and find their own success. And I think that that is, I think that's marvelous. And I do hope that, that, I mean, I know personally, I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking of doing a long bicycle ride this weekend and now I've got a destination.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, go
that's,
down
I
there.
Mean, that's exactly what I'm going to do, because I'm super excited. One, I don't know that I've ever had, well, let's see, let's, what we, the West African, was it Senegal?
There's Senegal, Congo.
Congo, and
yeah.
One other.
Now I don't have my script in front of me, yeah.
And, you know, it's an opportunity not only to try Gambia. Something new, but something that I actually firmly believe in. I mean, that's one of the things when people always they talk about the downside of what cancel culture or whatever that they like to talk about. The upside is voting with your pocketbook. And yeah. And when you see something that you dig and that you want to stay around, and something that's actually managing to take root at the worst possible time for restaurants to try and do that, go down there and spend some money. I mean, this is, you're not going to feel worse for it. You're going to feel better for it. And I know personally, I plan on doing that.
It's the perfect place to put it. I think, you know, Washington is quite white, and so people forget that Tukwila is very diverse. And a few years ago, I'm not sure if this is true, but it was the most diverse school district in the country. So it's definitely still up there. They speak about 60 languages in Tukwila schools.
Wow.
So having this place there, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who already know this food and eat this food that will be happy to go. But there's so many people like me who are just into trying new things. And I feel bad for them opening right now because, you know, they were supposed to open months ago and they kept putting it off for quarantine and eventually just said, hey, we have to do this. So they don't have, you know, the delivery system set up that a lot of restaurants do. So they rely on people going down in person and getting food to go.
Yeah. Again, you know, this is one of those things that I love to hear about. I love also to hear about a business incubator that actually is dealing with people on the lower end of the income spectrum. I mean, there's a lot of incubators that are sort of about, well, if you can generate $500,000 in venture capital, you know, we're going to help incubate. Like, all right, that's great. Fine. And that has its place. But the incubators that really, that's the whole culture, the microloan culture, the whole idea of providing enough for someone just to get started. Because getting started is really the difficult thing. And the fact is that we have a whole group of, and it's women, who are getting started in this thing. They all are making, you know, I told you when the thing started, like the worst thing you could do to me is have that deep fryer sound at the beginning of this.
And hear the word chicken.
I got completely distracted and I mean, my stomach started growling immediately. So I love the story and I'm really excited for the fact that, that we have this locally, and everybody in Seattle, sometimes I think don't realize that the real actual cultural diversity happens less in Seattle than it does in the Seattle suburbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going down south is a place to get your culture. And, you know, at the beginning of the whole civil rights movement that we're in right now, one of the stories I did involved around, you know, you need to show your kids that you have healthy relationships with people of all colors. And there was the idea of, well, what if you don't have a black friend? What if you don't have friends of different cultures? And the message was, leave your neighborhood, you know, like you
exactly.
move to a neighborhood for a reason, nothing to do with race, but you move there. And sometimes you have to leave it. So if that
Absolutely.
Means, you know, driving a half an hour, 45 minutes to go down to Tukwila to get a meal, it might be worth it so that you can be around people who don't look like you. You can hear accents and different languages, and your kids can too, so that that becomes normal for them. You know, different flavors, different accents. It's super important.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell for information on how to get there.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Long day. little bit of a disappointing day if you are a baseball fan. I'll get into that more in a minute. But time of the show where we empty out the last tablespoon in our heads into your ears.
Yeah. There it is.
Frank, what you got?
You know, I did something I haven't done in months because of the pandemic. I went to Crossroads Food Court, which, if you've never been to Crossroads Mall, the food court there, in my opinion, is the most interesting and fun one in the Seattle area because it's multicultural.
You've right, yeah.
Every kind of food you could want. And I got a great soup. And then I thought, I get a little baklava for dessert. But then I went over to a part of the mall to eat it, and I realized that the Starbucks that was in there is gone. They've torn it out, and it's not coming back. All that's left now for where it was are little pipes and wires. And it broke my heart. You know, I talked to a couple of the merchants there, and they are struggling. And the Starbucks has been there as long as my daughter's been alive and as long as for 20-plus years. And it just reminded me of how hard this 6 months has been for people, particularly small business people.
Absolutely.
You can speak to this better than most people, Mike. And I just wanted to take a second tonight to just give my love and my best to the people who I know are fighting so hard to stay afloat during this time period.
They can use that. That's really sweet, Frank. Shane?
Well, as I've kind of chronicled, what's the word I'm looking for? As I've chronicled, yes, in the past couple of days, talking about my adventures with the dentist. I got my root canal scheduled today, and I figured out how to get it all paid for. So
really?
Cool. Yeah, so that's one thing that I'm have on my mind is I'm just thankful that I was able to figure that out so I can get this the squeaking wheel of a tooth out of the back of my mouth.
Get rid of the pain.
Good luck on that. Root canal is a lousy experience, but the non-root canal is a lousier one.
It's worse. Yes.
Having had a couple of root canals.
Yeah, have you?
I
only had one.
I've had three, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. I had a terrible dentist growing up, Dr. Soderstrom. I don't mind saying his name. And all of us ended up with just like, you know, cracked molars when we got older because he did the fillings that he put in. Like, it was, I had bad dentistry as a kid.
I'll
say that with that equivocation. On my mind is I want to say quick, like Frank was offering sympathy for the business owners, which is a much more serious thing. I'm also offering sort of milder sympathy, but serious sympathy for Mariners fans. You found out today that even on this kind of lark of a crazy 60-game season, the Mariners had a chance to squeak in. Didn't actually happen. You have a lot to root for. But I have to say, it occurred to me when I was like, I felt myself weirdly disappointed in this. And I think I'm going to say something a little bit bold for me. I think that I would rather see the Mariners win a championship than any of my three favorite teams, all of which have won multiple championships. The Warriors have, the Raiders have. Not in a long time. And the Giants have.
Yeah.
And I got to say, Mariners fans are so ridiculously loyal, so loyal. They haven't even been to one of the only teams that's never even been to the World Series, much less won one. I'm putting them at the top of my list for a team I want to see win a World Series as soon as possible. And I'm hoping this young squad actually has the wheels to do it in the next couple of years. So Mariners fans, I'm with you. I am really going to be rooting hard for this team come next season. And hopefully we have a normal baseball season. And thank you all for listening again tonight. As always, we really appreciate it. And we will see you tomorrow where we're going to talk about big preview with Stacey. We're going to be talking about the big game against the Cowboys, and apparently we're going to know exactly what's going to happen in advance.
No.
Yeah. See you tomorrow. I know they know some way I plan that to be.